For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Luckily, I don't have a whole lot of an introduction. I'm just a student at the University of Chicago Divinity School who have been the intern here, and I'm very glad to give this talk. It's really wonderful to see everyone, so thank you. I felt that I needed to begin this talk on this particular day by drawing attention to some of the events going on throughout our country and in our city of Chicago. I am currently broadcasting from suburbs outside of Boston. This is the land that originally belongs to a confederation of people called the Massachusetts, which is, that's where the state gets its name. I have been a resident of Chicago for the last 6 years. And it hurts me to not be there in this time. And so I hope I can provide some sort of space in the Sangha today. What we're seeing is an affront to the dignity of human life, an affront to the sanctity of our communities, what it means to feel safe, to feel protected, to feel a valued member of our society. I want to affirm that Black Lives Matter, that the things that are happening in our country today are a direct response to the fact that the system we live in does not currently uphold that belief that Black Lives Matter. And so I just wanted to begin by reading a list of names, and these are Black people who have been killed by the police in the last decade. This is a long list, but it is by no means an exhaustive list. So please listen to these names, hear these names, and remember that these were people who were murdered by a racist system. Eric Garner, John Crawford III, Michael Brown, Ezell Ford, Dante Parker, Michelle Casso, Laquan McDonald, George Mann, Tanisha Anderson, Akai Gurley, Tamir Rice, Romaine Brisbane, Jeremy Reed, Matthew Ajibade, Frank Smart, Natasha McKenna, Tony Robinson, Anthony Hill, Maya Hall, Philip White, Eric Harris, Walter Scott, William Chapman II, Alexia Christian, Brendan Glenn, Victor Manuel La Rosa, Jonathan Sanders, Freddie Blue, Joseph Mann, Salvador Elswood, Sandra Bland, Albert Joseph Davis, Darius Stewart, Billy Ray Davis, Samuel Dubose, Michael Sabby, Brian Keith Day, Christian Taylor, Troy Robinson, Asham Sparrow Manley, Felix Kumi, Keith Harrison McLeod, Junior Prosper, Lamonte Jones, Patterson Brown, Dominic Hutchinson, Anthony Ashford, Alonzo Smith, Tyree Crawford, India Kager, Levante Biggs, Michael Lee Marshall, Jamar Clark, Richard Perkins, Nathaniel Harris Pickett, Benny Lee Tigner, Miguel Espinal, Michael Knoll, Kevin Matthews, Betty Jones, Quintonio Legrier, Keith Childress Jr., Janet Wilson, Randy Nelson, Anthony Scott, Wendell Celestine, David Joseph, Kaylin Rockmore, Deshaun Perkins, Christopher Davis, Marco Loud, Peter Gaines, Torrey Robinson, Darius Robinson, Kevin Hicks, Mary Trujillo, DeMarcus Semmer, Willie Tillman, Terrell Thomas, Civil Smith, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Terrence Crutcher, Paul O'Neill, Altaria Woods, Jordan Edwards, Aaron Bailey, Rennell Foster, Stephon Clark, Antoine Rose II, Botham Jean, Pamela Turner, Dominique Clayton, Tatiana Jefferson, Christopher Whitfield, Christopher McCorvey, Eric Reason, Michael Lorenzo Dean, Brianna Taylor, Ahmad Arbery, Tony McDade, and George Floyd. Thank you. So the topic of my talk today is about forms and ceremonies, which is this precept that we have to sustain forms and ceremonies. And I wanted to start just with a quote that I found from the brilliant Dr. Cornel West. Dr. West is a minister as well as a professor of philosophy at both Princeton and Harvard. He's a very brilliant, a very soulful man. And when I was, you know, how can I talk about what's happening right now with forms and structures? And I found this this quote from this video, this interview with Dr. Cornel West, and he says, "Nihilism is resting on hopelessness, with helplessness, with lovelessness. And there can be no democracy when nihilism rules. You have to have some structures of feeling. You have to have some structures of value that accent the rule of demos, the rule of the people, the rule of ordinary people, the rule of everyday people. And therefore, you have to have some vision of the future tied to common good and public interest for any democracy to have a chance to flourish and flower. We need a fundamental commitment to public interests and the common good, what it means to be a citizen, not simply what it means to be a consumer, not simply what it means to be a person tied to private gain. How do we focus on the things that tie us together, that bond us together? This is why grotesque wealth inequality, this is why xenophobia, it could be against indigenous peoples, it could be against Muslims, could be against gays and lesbians and trans people and bisexuals. It could be against black people, brown people. How do we accent the degree to which we either hang together or hang separately?" Now, I think that this quote ties very much into what I wanted to talk about with forms and structures and ceremonies and how they can serve us and how we need to be careful of them and what we can actually do with them. So I think that beneath this maybe not super exciting face value reading of what it means for us to embrace and sustain forms and ceremonies as Zen people, beneath the surface reading is one of the most, I have found, one of the most useful teachings that Zen can offer in times like these. And in short, that is a practice of how we keep our stuff together when everything is falling down around us. And in order to talk about this, I wanted to share a little bit about my experiences this year as an intern with Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and what that has taught me about forms and ceremonies and our practice. So to give a little bit of background, since I'm sure there are many people, even if I've known you for the last 9 months, you're very curious about what it means that I'm an intern at Ancient Dragon, so let me tell you. I have been helping to coordinate our Wednesday sittings down in Hyde Park with the Hyde Park Zen Group, as well as just kind of being around Ancient Dragon as much as I can, being someone who's there to help with the various roles we have, like greeter or like go on, or helping with the tea, things like that. And this internship is through the degree that I'm working on right now, which is a Master's of Divinity degree, which I think we have a few MDivs in the audience, but if you didn't know, a Master of Divinity is kind of a professional degree that has to do with religious leadership. So I'm in my second year now. I'm finishing up my second year, and we do these what's called congregational placements. And so the idea is that everyone is getting a chance to get out and be in their community of practice, in their community of tradition, and seeing what it's like to work in there. And Ancient Dragon was a very, very natural choice for me in terms of my congregational placement, because it was through Ancient Dragon and through the Hyde Park Zen Group that I was actually introduced to this practice in the first place. I was 18 or 19, and I was kind of studying Buddhism intellectually at the time, and there was a class where the professor had brought in Nyozon to talk about his practice in Ancient Dragon, and he mentioned this Hyde Park Zen group that we have, and I showed up, and he taught me how to meditate, and here I am now, which is a little bit wild to consider. The question really is what do I do as an intern? What is my role? And like I kind of alluded to, the answer really, in the most general sense, is I'm there to do anything that's needed, because, you know, we don't have a very concrete role in place within the tradition for an intern. So we're playing it by ear. We're improvising a little bit. The joke that I have kind of been telling myself and my friends is that this year is kind of my monastic year, because what my days look like, or I've pretty much been at school studying Sanskrit, or I've been up at the temple meditating and helping out. And obviously that's a joke, but there's truth to it too, because the extent to which my practice has deepened in this last year is really hard to express. And so I guess why I'm talking right now is try to express that through forms and ceremonies. And I've gotten a lot clearer on what it means for me to be a Zen Buddhist and what my practice means as a Zen person. How do I conduct my life on a day-to-day level? What does it mean for me to be in community with people? These are things that come through practice. These are things that you find in practice. Now, my advisor, Yoshin Laurel, one of the first things that she told me that stuck with me up at the temple was that she was beginning to train me on these various sort of ceremonial rules that we have, things like striking the han, things like cleaning our incense holders or making tea. And what she told me was that we just need to do it, right? It's not a matter of getting super caught up in the thought of it. It's not a matter of, did I do this the right way? Am I going to get an A on this performance? Is this a good one? Just do it. Don't worry about what happens before. Don't worry about what happens after. Zen is about being on time. I think that's something that Suzuki Roshi says. Zen is about being on time. If you are striking that han, just strike the han. Don't do anything else. If you're making tea, just make the tea. Just fill the teapot. Just pour the tea. I think the time that I learned this the most clearly was when I was learning how to strike the han the right way. And so if you have been to our sangha, the han is a big wooden board out in the front. Serves a purpose that is kind of analogous to like a church bell, where it's telling you, okay, there are 15 minutes until our zazen. Okay, there's 7 minutes. Okay, you better be in your seat. Now, I learned this lesson of just doing it the hard way because I had been doing something else while I thought that I was actually striking the han. And so I was worried about, did I lock the door? Did I lock the door before I did this? And as a result of not being fully there to strike the han, I dropped the mallet and I bent over. I picked the mallet up and I stood right back up, of course, not mindfully, because all I'm thinking is, oh crap, I just ruined it. I'm going to get an F. I dropped the mallet. And I stood right back up and I nailed my head right on the han. And it did not feel good. But let me tell you, now I remember, just strike the han. Strike the han. You're going to get yourself hit in the head if you don't. And this is, I think, the biggest learning curve, for me at least. And if I can generalize, I think maybe for American Zen practitioners in general, if that resonates with you. The hard thing is that we come to this place, we come into the Zendo, we enter a sangha, and there is this ritual and this ceremony and this right way to act in the temple, which is not the way that we act outside the temple. Right? When we come in, we take our shoes off, we bow to each other, we bow when we come into the Zendo. We make sure we don't cross directly in front of the altar and the Buddha. It is a very, very different way of interacting in the world and in being in a place, showing reverence to a space and to a place and to the people in that place and to the space. So I wanted to read a little bit from Being Upright by Reb Anderson, which I'm sure many folks in the sangha know, but if you don't, Being Upright is a book that was recommended to me by Taigen about the Bodhisattva precepts. And it is an explanation of what do these precepts mean and how do you practice them in a sort of very condensed manner. Now, one of our precepts is to embrace and sustain forms and ceremonies, which is what we're doing when we act that certain way in the temple or when we're striking the han or making the tea. Those are embracing and sustaining forms and ceremonies. You know, even us doing this Zoom call at the same time as we normally would, sitting in the same way we normally would, this is embracing and sustaining forms and ceremonies. So Reb Anderson writes, "The true or liberating nature of all things is formless and inconceivably wonderful. It cannot be grasped, but it can be realized through the forms of everyday life." I want to repeat that. It cannot be grasped, but it can be realized through the forms of everyday life. By giving up our habitual personal styles of deportment and bringing our body, speech, and thought into accord with traditional forms and ceremonies, we merge in realization with Buddha. We renounce our habit body and manifest the true Dharma body. This is renouncing worldly affairs and entering the Buddha way. The Buddha way is all-pervading and free of limits. Yet, without some container in which to practice, it cannot be fully realized. Without some container in which to practice, it cannot be fully realized. Being upright and gentle is the appropriate attitude with which to practice these forms and ceremonies. To be upright is to be intimate with them. The intimate practice of these regulations is neither rigid nor loose. In intimate practice, you find a balance that is neither submissive to nor defiant of the tradition. What I really like about this passage, and the thing that I take out of it, is the way that forms and ceremonies are put very explicitly and very upfront into a context of embrace and intimacy. Because like I said, for me, coming out of this certain perspective, forms and ceremonies can sound like something that is very sterile or rigid. So to embrace forms and ceremonies is to be intimate with forms and ceremonies and to really live them out as an important part of the way that we interact with the world. So to illustrate again, I can talk about some of my experiences being a Doan, which is, you know, ringing the bells at the right time, signaling the beginning and the ending of meditation, as well as keeping track with the chants and the different sort of prostrations. The important thing about being a Doan, the sort of essential job of the job, the meat of the practice here, is that what you're really doing is you are keeping time. You're making sure that people are operating synchronously, that people are on the same page as each other, which this goes back to that thing that I said, which is Zen is, in a nutshell, being on time. But the important question is, what does it mean to be on time? Being on time as a Doan does not mean that I ring the bells at exactly 7:15 and then exactly again at 7:50. What it means is that in a silent conversation with all of the other people sitting Zazen, with all of the other people who are conducting this ritual, the Doan is to keep things harmonious and to keep people on time with each other. Keep people on time with each other. So for me, as someone who gets up in my head very easily and gets very perfectionist about it, I would sit there and be so focused on not getting it wrong that I wouldn't actually be present to harmonize the room that I was in. Because, you know, it was this thing of, okay, is it 7:15 yet? Is it 7:15 yet? Is this the right time to hit it? And the thing that you learn through this practice of Doaning that I have learned doing it a bunch of times is that if you're like me, as badly as you want to be able to memorize this or to master it, you can't. Because what you're doing is relying on signals from other people. And in turn, those people are looking for signals from the rest of the Sangha and the Zendo, and those things are not fixed. Those things are different every single time you try them. They're never the same. So to truly embrace this ceremony and this form and to truly be intimate with it, to me, is to actually be there. It's to be there and to do it. And to do it really mindfully without thinking about other things. To be truly intimate. And it was when I started doing that, that I started to actually have my Dohaning bring me more into presence. And it made a shift from this worry of, I need to master time, I need to make it right for everyone else, into, I feel more present now because I am thinking about where everyone else is at, and I am paying attention to the fact that we are like this, you know, this murmuration of birds flocking together, and one follows the other. And that's what's happening. So on this point, I think this is what is being gotten at when Reb Anderson writes, non-attachment is the essence of the practice of embracing and sustaining forms and ceremonies. Finding perfect balance between observing forms and letting go of them, you realize the liberating potential of this first pure precept. So let me repeat that. Finding perfect balance between observing the forms and letting go of them, you realize the liberating potential of the first pure precept. When practiced properly, these forms are beautiful expressions of the interdependence of all things. Their true nature is that they have no fixed nature. What we are doing here is so important that we should not take it too seriously. We should never take this precious practice so seriously that we lose our sense of humor. So I guess that me telling you this story about banging my head on the horn is a good sign for me. Now, obviously, I think that this has some application outside of just the temple and outside of our sitting. And actually, I think this is what this whole thing is about. This is why we sit. It's very common, it's a very sort of colloquial usage to throw around this word Zen as an adjective when we are describing something as calm or meditative or mindful, right? So Zen and the art motorcycle babies. He has a very Zen attitude towards things. That's very Zen. And truthfully, I think when this word is used in this way, in this colloquial sense, the lifting that it's doing is precisely talking about this intimacy with forms and ceremonies, right? To say that there's a Zen, that person, they're in the midst of this crazy thing and they have such a Zen attitude about it. That is being intimate with the forms and ceremonies of practice and being present in the moment as it is. Doing something in the Zen way, embracing forms and ceremonies, we do something intimately without overthinking it or letting it become something other than what it is. So in the temple, this might be something like just ring the bell, just clean the incense. But in the real world, this is, you know, just fill out the paperwork, just send the email, just do it. Stop worrying about it and embrace it. Failure happens, you will learn from it, and you will remember. I think that my absolute favorite quote from Suzuki Roshi, you've spent any amount of time talking to me, is the one that perhaps aggravates me the most. And he said, this was actually a conversation between Reb Anderson and Suzuki Roshi, I guess. And so Reb asks, what is right effort? And Suzuki Roshi says, to get up with no hesitation when your alarm clock rings. If you haven't noticed already, we are living through an episode where we are completely stripped of our habits and our forms and the ceremonies that we usually follow. It feels like time and space have become this like weird blob. And especially this week, you know, there's that quote, there are weeks that feel like years, and there are the opposite of that. And it's just so strange. It feels like everything is happening at once, and yet nothing is happening at any time. It feels like now is forever and here is everywhere. So in these times, our practice of embracing forms and ceremonies with creativity and humor comes to the fore as an anchor. And what Zen shows us is that practice cannot be something that is completely without form. You can't have practice without any form or any structure or any ceremony. But it also shows that these things, form and ceremony and structure, these things don't need to be suffocated. Embracing forms is not about perfection, but about consistency and effort and mindfulness. And that's, I think, the great gift of this practice and the great gift that I have found through this year of me deepening my practice. And the gift of this precept, which is our ability to be present and mindful and to embrace the moment and be intimate with the moment. And we can do this in every new moment of experience if we are present and attentive to the moment at hand. I guess to close this out, I'm reminded of a quote that comes from the Platform Sutra, which is the story of how Huainong became the sixth patriarch of the Chan school of Chinese Buddhism, which would later become the Zen school, which is our tradition. And Huainong, in this quote, he's talking about meditation and wisdom and one of these things. And he says, each moment of meditation is wisdom, and all wisdom is meditation. And I think that we can make anything meditative or mindful wise if we are willing to invest that presence, if we are willing to embrace and be intimate with the morning and with the form and with the ceremony. Thank you. I am, please, questions. I am learning with you. This is just me saying some things that I think I would love for you to help me sharpen this.
Thank you very much, Alex. I'm going to jump in as the host and let people know that you can raise your hand to ask a question. If you click on the icon for participants at the bottom of your screen, and then on the side by your name, there will be an option to raise your hand. You're also welcome to just ask away if you are visible and Alex can see you. And I'll let you call on people as you see them, and I'll let you know if I see anybody that you don't see.
Sure. Thank you. Let's see, Laurel.
I'm unmuted, right? Thank you for that wonderful talk, Alex. I wanted to just say, from my point of view and from, I believe, the point of view of the Sangha, you have our deep gratitude for your service this year. Alex is the fifth person that we've had as an intern, and I've had the privilege of working with each one of them. Each one has been an individual, unique unto themselves. And Alex certainly is that. And he has had probably the most challenges from the universe in his time with us here. But he has risen pretty much to every occasion elegantly. We really appreciate that. We will not have an intern next year, unfortunately. Of course, we don't know what next year will bring. But I always send a letter of gratitude to the Divinity School for their relationship with us, because it really adds richness to our experience. And thank you very much for reading the list of names at the beginning of your talk. It was important.
Thank you. And I also want to add, just to be very clear, just because I'm done being an intern does not mean I'm leaving the Sangha. I would be very glad to come back. I saw David before. David, do you have a question?
wonderful talk. Thank you. It was very, very meaningful for me to hear you speak the way you do, because sometimes I get wrapped up in whether I'm going to get an A or an F in the
solidarity.
So I appreciate what you said. It was very, very meaningful for me. Thank you.
Hagen.
Yeah, I'm sorry that due to technical difficulties, I was not on time to do the introduction, but I want to thank Alex for a wonderful talk. Thank you for reading the names. Thank you for the Cornel West quote. Thank you for a wonderful description of our practice of ceremonies and forms. And I want to thank Yoshin Laurel Ross for leading our intern program, and I trust we will have more UC Divinity School interns. But I don't know if it was mentioned at the beginning, but Alex has also been very helpful in our Hyde Park Rockefeller Chapel group, and the people who lead that. One of our teachers, Neozon Eric Schutt, Brian Taylor, and Howard Braun are also here, and other people from Hyde Park, like Xingyu. Just so people know, for new people, that the Wednesday afternoon Hyde Park talks are now on Zoom also, but on a different platform. So go to our website and you can join in those ongoing talks. So again, thank you to Alex and to Gyoshin and to all the people who are taking care of our Hyde Park group. And just to mention that we, for new people, we will be expanding our Zoom offerings here at Ancient Dragon, including Monday evening Dharma talks. I'll be talking tomorrow evening, touching on some of what Alex already talked about. So thank you very much, and welcome everybody. Thank you. And I saw Howard from Hyde Park also had his hand up. So
thank you.
Thanks, Alex, for your talk. Whenever people tell this, you know, to tell the any story that involves the, you know, when hungry, just eat, that sort of format, I'm reminded of my favorite one. I used to practice in the Quantum tradition, which was founded by Zen Master Sung Zan. And the story I came across from there was he was on tour, you know, going around teaching, and he has some students with him. And one day his students wake up, and they see him sitting at the table eating cereal and reading a newspaper. And they're like, Zen Master Sun Sun, what are you doing? He's like, what do you mean, what am I doing? Well, you said when hungry, just eat. You know, just when you drink, just drink. But you're eating food, you're reading a newspaper at the same time. It's like, yeah, when eating and reading a newspaper, just eat and read a newspaper. Which I think it actually, you know, I think that it sounds a little jokey, but I think it's also actually, it really cuts to the point too. It's this illusion of like, well, you only do one thing then. It's like, no, it's not so much doing one thing. It's really, where is your mind? What is happening in this very moment? What is your relationship to what is happening at that very moment? And, you know, it's not so much a question, or maybe I'm just curious to hear your thoughts, but, you know, you mentioned that, you know, I think a lot about forms and rituals too. And a lot of forms and rituals have kind of, they've been broken apart by the pandemic. But in a lot of other ways, and I think especially this last week, right, we realized that, oh, there are some forms and rituals that are still there in a really powerful way that some of us are more mindful of for whatever reason than others. And I guess I'm just curious about, you know, if you have any thoughts about that, any reflections about that.
Yeah, it's, thank you, Howard. Let me respond to the first point first, just cause I really like that a lot. Yeah, I like that idea. So what? I'm reading and I'm eating. Because I like that a lot. I don't think it's necessarily about you can only do one thing at a time. It's about be clear about what you're doing. Be very clear about what you're doing. Don't fool yourself about what's happening, where your energy is going. As for this, the second question about where, tell me if I'm hearing this question right, about where the forms and ceremonies still are, how we can handle these things. Is that correct, Howard?
You know, it's a lot of, my experience with a lot of these things with Zen practice has been, you know, you learn the forms of Zen, and on the other side of it, you also learn quite a lot about the forms, you know, you've learned and that you've inherited. And in a sense, you really learn, you know, how you handle form in general. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe I'm just being a little bit too abstract and I just say the damn thing. The pandemic broke out, a lot of the forms of like, oh, this is what it means to have to go to work. This is what it means to go see friends. You know, this is what it means to have a social life. And that stuff is broken apart. But now this week, it's like, oh, well, the form of how police handle these situations is still here. Profits still continue to go up for a lot of companies. Those forms are still here. And I guess I'm just curious how you're sort of viewing all of that about mindfulness of form, paying attention to form, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you. That's a really excellent question. And one that I certainly cannot answer myself. I really hear you there. And I will say before I luckily found this Cornel West quote, which I think is a productive and kind of uplifting quote, not that he says things that aren't productive and uplifting. But before, when I was thinking about how am I going to talk about the fact that 1,000 protesters got arrested last night in Chicago, getting tear gassed and getting, you know, I have a friend who had his hands above his head, got bashed with a baton and put in jail. And how do I talk about that in relationship to forms and ceremonies? And I think I did, and I still do, and maybe this is what I'm hearing out of that question. We need to have a healthy skepticism of form and ceremony, and maybe a better way to put that is to say we need to have creativity and even a sense of humor around form and ceremony. Because on the one hand, it is so abundantly obvious that the forms and ceremonies that we think exist and that we think uphold the life that we think that we lead, it is so clear that those forms and ceremonies are either not as helpful as we think that they are, or they are actively harmful, either to us in ways that we don't recognize, or to people who are not like us, or to people who we don't think are like us. On the other hand, I think the reason that I wanted to raise this Cornel West quote, and I want to be very, very clear, is that he's speaking about nihilism. He's talking about nihilism as a thing that is destructive to democracy and is destructive to community. And what I hear when he says that, and what I want to bring to the fore, is that many of the systems that we live under, many of the systems that we live under in terms of the police, in terms of the prison industrial complex, in terms of the way that our economy functions, many of these forms and structures are not forms or structures at all. There are these nihilistic holes that say that power is the most important thing, and that money is the most important thing, and that might makes right. And the most insidious level is at the personal level, and that personal nihilism of it doesn't affect me, or it's not worth my time, or it's not worth my effort because I can't make a change, or because people are fundamentally wrong, or because this country is fundamentally wrong. That is nihilism, and that is a rejection of form and ceremony. And so I would just want to bring attention to that and to think about what are the forms and the ceremonies that sustain us and that sustain our communities? And what are the forms and ceremonies that lead to disunity? What are the forms? What are the structures that are actually anti-structures in our society? What is it that we should actually be embracing and sustaining and being intimate with? Yes, I do.
Would you please read the Cornel West quote again?
With pleasure. Nihilism is resting on hopelessness, with helplessness, with lovelessness. And there can be no democracy when nihilism rules. You have to have some structures of feeling. You have to have some structures of value that accent the rule of demos, the rule of the people, the rule of ordinary people, the rule of everyday people. And therefore, you have to have some vision of a future tied to common good and public interest for any democracy to have a chance to flourish and flower. We need a fundamental commitment to public interests and the common good, what it means to be a citizen, not simply what it means to be a consumer, and not simply what it means to be a person tied to private gain, right? So those are structures that we're tied to. How do we focus on the things that tie us together, the things that bond us together? This is why grotesque wealth inequality. This is why xenophobia. It could be against indigenous peoples. It could be against Muslims. It could be against gays and lesbians and trans and bisexuals. It could be against Black people, brown people. How do we accent the degree to which we either hang together or we hang separately? David, I saw that you had a hand.
I did, thank you. Thank you, Alex. So, I wanna thank you for that talk, and I wanna thank you for being the first face of ancient dragon that I saw when I started coming around in January. And I wound up, you know, to my surprise, riding home with you and like four other Hyde Park people. And thank you especially for the connections that you helped me make in this, in your talk about this tradition that I am still, you know, making new discoveries about every week. And so this thing about forms and ceremony, that's something that has felt important to me in my spiritual life that has had different, you know, religious affiliations. And I really appreciate the way that you made the connection between forms and ceremonies in Zen and very much in an American Zen context and the moment in time that we're living now, like this connection that forms and ceremonies and an attitude of that's upright toward them is connected with things like civic belonging, civic virtue. I was going to ask you to say more, to reflect more about what it means to be an American Zen Buddhist practitioner, but since I had that thought, sort of everything that you've been saying since then, it was as though somehow that question got lobbed in. I feel like everything you've been saying has been an answer to that. But if you have more reflection, like about, you know, the specific, however you want to say, dharma of being an American Zen practitioner, I'd love to hear that too. And thank you again for the talk.
Thank you. A very big question. I think if I could do a lateral here, can I open the floor if there's someone else who has thoughts about being an American Zen Buddhist? Taigen, I saw you unmuted yourself. Do you have anything to say?
Well, I think you've said a lot already. In some ways, it just means being an American. In some ways, it means just being a Zen Buddhist. And it means paying attention. And how do we, from the Bodhisattva perspective, how do we respond to you know, hitting the Han, and to hearing about the atrocious police murders of African Americans, and how do we respond to elections and demonstrations and the forms of civic life in our country. And so, you know, we can't be Japanese or whatever. How do we, and what it means to be an American is so complicated now. And what's happening now with the pandemic is so complicated. And as you said, Alex, it affects our everyday forms and routines. So anyway, it's a huge topic. I'm going to talk tomorrow evening about Sangha and racism and what Sangha means. And so that is to some of the point, but there's so much to say. Maybe other people have things to throw in to contribute.
Saw a hand from Fushin on there. You're still muted.
Sorry. I'm reflecting on forms and ceremonies from the standpoint of how different groups have different unique forms of life that support them, and how what's going on in the boundaries and in the fluid boundaries between groups of people needs to be always a conversation. I remember I was speaking with Tigan the other day about a talk that Reb gave at Clouds and Water one time on justice. I don't know if anybody else was at this session where he said that justice is never found in anyone or any group of people's view of justice. Mm-hmm. It's found when it's found in a conversation among us. So these forms and ceremonies that we as Zen Buddhists observe have given us life, have been received from our ancestors as life-giving forms. And they're observed as life-giving forms when they become inflexible. I mean, I remember this is another teaching of Reb's, is the relationship between precision and flexibility is very, very important. And sometimes we need to be more flexible. Sometimes we need to be more defined in what we do, but we can communicate these forms when people walk in with form and expression of deep wisdom. They communicate. There's no need to talk. And then what happens in those communication areas is what seems to me to be life-giving. And when those break down, that's where we really need to be present and allow other people to speak. Thank you.
Thank you.
David? Yeah, a couple of things that come to mind. We speak about forms, and I'm actually in a dialogue with my daughter, who is a social science master's student at Columbia right now, and talking about, you know, what's going on and seeing riot as a form. It's a form of expression that, you know, it's a form of resisting oppression, and how I have conflicts with that, and how that sometimes I feel that it's self-destructive, like, you know, Cornel West is saying, it's a form of nihilism rather than an actual form. And and I throw this open to everybody, is, you know, how do we look at what's going on and make sense of what's going on now? And for me, it's just terribly tragic and sad. And, you know, you call out the National Guard, and that means that possibly more people will be killed, that there'll be shooting or something, and more life will be needlessly lost. You know, how do we, and I say this to you, Tigan, also, how do we grasp this in our practice and be able to embody it and say, it's okay. It's not okay, but it's reality. And seeing that, like Martin Luther King says, that a riot is really the voice of the unheard who is never listened to. Basically, I don't have his exact words, but basically it's what he said, that action like this is people saying, you never heard me. You never listened to me. So this is the only way I can express myself. And so I understand that. I understand that. Yet at the same time, I have an aversion to it. I see this so needlessly, people destroying their own communities. And it's just a hard thing to take. It's just very, very difficult to take. And so I open it up to you, especially because you're talking about form per se, and to the group as a whole, because it is something that I am very much struggling with, very, very much struggling with. So looking forward to everyone's comments and to your comments, Alex. I thank you. That whole thing about Cornel West, and I've seen him speak in person, and he's just, unbelievable. I remember him saying, folks, this is harder than rocket science. People say, oh, this isn't rocket science. No, this is harder than rocket science. We've put a man on the moon. We've done that, but we can't live together. And so this is harder than rocket science. And so thank you so much for your compliments. And I'm having a hard time. I'm tearing up thinking about all this and how do we handle it. So I really appreciate your talk. There was so much wisdom in your talk today. So if you want to comment first on what I just said and then open it up to everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. I think tears are a very appropriate response right now. I hear everything you're saying. It's very scary times. There's no easy way to talk about it. There are no simple answers. The one thing that I feel strongly that I need to add is that, yes, it is scary to look and to see buildings burning and to see this narrative of communities being destroyed. But I want to point out, I just want to be clear about the systemic nature of what is happening. And the fact that, like MLK says, a riot is the voice for the people who are not heard, for the people who can't be heard any other way. And to ask about the ways in which communities of color and Black communities have been impressed upon, have been oppressed by militarized police forces and by multinational corporations who do not have a true investment in the community. And I just ask to hold the full horror of it. And I'm not, this is not, please don't take it as saying you're not holding the full horror. I know that you are, but the full horror of the situation, which is there are people who have been so utterly mistreated that they know that they need to take an action. They know that they need to make a difference. And so the action of burning something down is not necessarily an action of nihilism. It's not an action that says nothing matters and that we don't have values. But it is in a system, in a capitalist system, which can, like I said, I don't want to alienate people. I don't want to get on my soapbox, so please forgive me. But we live in a system in which if you are not actively fighting against it, if you do not have a practice of your own like this or like some sort of political practice, the system that you grow up in is one of nihilism. And nihilism is something that needs to be unlearned in our society, in my experience. And I appreciate your thoughts, and I'm glad you're here. And I, this is very much an open conversation with the whole Sangha, because this is a community thing. This is a thing that no one person has an answer, and no one community has the answer. We need to be both bonding as a community, coming closer together as a group of people who already have a community, and perhaps even more importantly, we need to be bridging. We need to be reaching out to other communities who we might not know so much about, communities who might not look exactly like us. This is the time for us to reach out to our brothers and sisters who are Christian, who are Muslim, who are Jewish, and to create these structures of meaning and of value and of dignity for human life. This is my baby answer. Shinyu, do you have something to add?
Thank you so much for your talk, especially in this particular situation. So, so I think Tygen and David mentioned the what it means by American Zen practitioner. I can talk about what it means as a non-American Zen practitioner. So I honestly probably, since I came from a very different political background, I'm from China. I might have like different ideas and like coming from a different perspective, but honestly, like from all of you, like what all of you are sharing, I just felt this big sense of like what is political is personal, and I think it definitely just connects so much to everybody's life, and to just feel how much it affected we all is just. I don't know what it means to me, to be fair. I don't know. And I actually learned about this instance from my mom, who saw it on Chinese social media, and she didn't know too much about American society at all. But, it was just on a level of humanity. I feel like it's something that's really deeply disheartening, and my mom was worried about racism in America as well, because I currently live in the United States. And there's just so much to, like, for me to personally, like, to process, like, what it means for me to live in the United States and where I want to go about it. So thank you so much for, like, bringing this up in the group. I'm really happy that this is something that people talk about here very openly. And I love to hear all of your thoughts, opinions about it. And also, a slight digression. Thank you so much, Alex, for offering so many rides to me from Hyde Park all the way to Ancient Dragon. It's always like super enjoyable to talk to you. Again, I still haven't really like achieved the goal of waking up right after alarm o'clock, but I'll try.
We'll hold each other accountable on that. Thank you, Cindy. And it is my absolute pleasure to give rides from Hyde Park to Ancient Dragon. So any Hyde Park people, I'm glad to help you out. I need one of those bumper stickers that says my other car is the Mahayana. Again.
Just to add briefly, David, rather than using the word riot, we might use the word uprising. There has been unfortunately, destruction of stores and so forth, and that is tragic. And yet, what it reflects a level of frustration. Well, there's also just, by the way, reports of white supremacists infiltrating these events and causing some of the property damage. And I saw it last night on television, police shooting tear gas and rubber bullets at very peaceful demonstrators. So this was just shown graphically on television. And so, you know, maybe that's a police riot. I don't know. What I want to say just briefly, and I'll say more tomorrow night, but this is so deeply ingrained, talking about Americans and Buddhism. America was built on slavery and racism, and our economy was produced through slavery and racism. And this is centuries old problem, and it's so deep in all of us. And so I think it's great that we are talking about it. We need to talk about it. But for those of us who are white, we need to talk about, I heard yesterday that the phrase that it's not enough to not be a racist, we have to be anti-racist. So as white people, we need to talk about this reality as part of our own, not as Xinyi said, it's societal, but it's also personal. We all have our own personal effects of this really centuries-old ancient karma in our country. So we're not going to solve this, but it's good that we're talking about it. And thank you, Alex, very much for how you brought this to us. And there's lots more to say, and I'll try and talk about it in terms of Sangha tomorrow evening. Thank you all.
So I wanted to be mindful of time. It is 11:25 right now. This is a fantastic conversation, but I think usually we go until 11. Are there more comments? This is open space.
I do not have the ability to raise my hand. So I did want to thank you for a really, really profound talk, and one that when you started out on it, I didn't realize how relevant it was going to be to today, but and how relevant it was going to be to my life. But coincidentally, I had a dream last night that I was trying to give Orioke instruction to about 20 people over Zoom. And it was horrible. It was just awful. I got so far as to help getting everybody to untie their bowls. And then I broke down over trying to explain to people how to like fold their, you know, wrapping cloth into the star. I just was like, I give up. Nobody could see me. I had to like narrate every single thing. And then I was going to try to talk about like how you fold the wiping cloth towards you, and then you fold it into like a Z, and then you pick the two things up. And I just could not. And I could see that everyone I was trying to teach was making every possible mistake. And eventually I realized like this whole thing was a mistake. This was a mistake to do. We're just going to have to, and people didn't even have the right equipment. And people didn't even have the same equipment, and some people were missing bowls. And eventually I was like, you know what, I think we should just go to the kitchen and get some food, and I can't deal with this. And it wasn't really until you were talking that I realized that this dream actually had everything to do with what I was seeing on the news last night and what I was seeing among my friends on Facebook who are espousing every possible opinion, really every possible opinion. And just trying to find a way to knit that together in myself and realizing that really it is impossible. So I so appreciated your talk about, one of the things, you talked about a lot of things. One of the things that I took from it was to just be in my position and not try to find some all-encompassing way of thinking about this or of communicating this to others. And B, I really appreciated, Fushin, what you were saying about, balance being found in the conversation and what's right being found in the conversation among all views. And just how, and I have a renewed sense of just how very difficult that is and how tempting it is to want to just, you know, fall back asleep and start having a different dream. So I encourage us to all not just fall back asleep and have a different dream, but to stay present to the dream and the reality that we're having. And Alex, it's really been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit better over the past year. I regret that we haven't been able to meet as much as we did in the beginning, but
there's plenty of time.
Yes, I hope that we will continue to be able to get to know each other a little bit better. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Ethan.
Are there any more questions or comments, or should we move on to our service? I think I will take that as a sign that we should. Oh, Brian.
Yes, I just wanted to quickly say how much I appreciated your connection, Alex, on forms and ceremonies with that it's really about harmonizing with other people that are doing it with you and really with the world. And I've the thing about forms and ceremonies that I've appreciated is the kind of reverence and devotion that it can bring up, that both for a wider sense of self that is Buddha, that is Buddha nature within all of us, and that is what we are doing together. And the tie-in that you made really between that and the social situation was very helpful for me, that forms and ceremonies have to do with really harmonizing with the world around us. How can we behave and live in such a way that brings about the Buddha nature that's inherent and not only within us, but in harmony with others around us. And I really appreciated that link between the Zendo and the world. So thank you.
Thank you.